This episode of the Locked On Sabres podcast is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me this week to get in on the action.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Friday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase, as always, from Locked On Sabres, and I'm joined this week again by Rachel Donner of Locked On Flyers. And I'm amazed we haven't talked since the big Ristolainen trade last weekend. How are Flyer fans taking it?
You know, I think it went from horror to acceptance over the past few days. I think that he is definitely a little bit of a reclamation project, but there is the factor of he had a really horrible bout with COVID last season. He was playing on a team that wasn't great overall, and that he's being moved from a top pairing role to a second pairing role. So there's hope there that he can turn things around a little bit. Plus, he only has 1 year left on the contract. So if it doesn't work out, they can part ways with him and almost no harm, no foul. So it's not as bad as it was given what we gave up for him, which was the big problem.
Yeah. How's Chuck Fletcher's reputation down there? Because I remember him in Minnesota, like it turned sour really quick. He's made a lot of trades with the Sabres, by the way, in his career. This was his sixth trade with the Sabres in his career. And I remember in Minnesota, like he was like really respected there. And then I think he's still respected in the league, no doubt. But in Minnesota, at least, like it turned sour really quick. And I'm not sure he's been there long enough for that to happen yet in Philly, right? Or has he?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is his third off season with the Flyers. And last season, he was a little bit cautious and basically had the attitude of we're going to trust some of the kids to take on certain roles. And it didn't work out in a lot of those cases. And so this season, he's made a lot of moves in an effort to get veteran leadership into the locker room, make a change, because he said that, you know, the roster that the Flyers had this past season, and I agree with him, is a good roster on paper, but just something wasn't working. So he just had to make some changes. And, you know, he's certainly done that. You can't argue that he hasn't achieved what he personally set out to do with the team, and whether it all works or not is to be seen.
Right. Right. All right. Well, we don't need to really dive into all that happened in free agency, as our Thursday show of the podcast really tackled it one by one. As we usually break down like the biggest headlines of the week, obviously you want to pick apart some teams and some moves that I thought were the biggest ones of the weekend. In fact, we're going to get into a couple teams that may have taken the biggest leaps forward from last year to this year. And a couple teams that we'll get to have, you know, they have teams that you would think were kind of arrow pointing down, and now maybe the arrow starting to point up again a little bit. We'll explain that in a little bit. But one contract that did happen yesterday after our Thursday show recorded was Brandon Saad going to the St. Louis Blues on a 5-year deal, $4.5 million per year. Nothing major here. You know, they hurt their rival, the Avalanche, a little bit. They replaced Mike Hoffman in their top six. Not much needs to be said here, right? But I mean, a signing that will help them, but I don't think changes, you know, how I think of them for next year in any way.
Yeah, not really. I think it's a good, solid signing, but it's not a game changer.
Right, exactly. And that was pretty much it. I mean, you had a lot of other minor moves around the league, but nothing crazy yesterday other than the Dougie Hamilton signing in New Jersey becoming official. And that is a monster extension that he signs there. The Devils had the cap space. In fact, they really almost needed to make that deal in order to help them reach the cap floor. He comes in with an average annual value of $9 million per year on a 7-year deal. The Hurricanes, Don Waddell sounded like they wanted to keep him, but could not compete with that offer. This is kind of it makes sense in that the Devils needed to spend money. Hamilton's looking to cash out, but I think we talked about it a little bit before the show when kind of going through teams like, hey, did this team get a lot better? Did this team get a lot better? It's a good player. It's a great player even for the Devils, but I can't get on board with the rest of that roster to think that they're going to take a next step.
Yeah, I think, you know, they could improve a little bit. I just think they're such a young team that they just haven't matured into a contender yet.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely right. In that division, we're going back to the divisions next year. So if you forgot, it's going to be Carolina or hold on one second. Of course, I brought up the divisions for next year. And what did I do? I accidentally brought up the divisions for last season. No, the divisions next year go back to Carolina, Columbus, New Jersey, the Islanders, the Rangers, the Flyers, the Penguins, and the Capitals. And I don't know, maybe I'd put Columbus below them, but that might be it. Like, would they not be second from the bottom for you in that division going into next year still?
You know, other than that, I am very curious how this Tom Wilson antagonist experiment goes for the New York Rangers. I think that it could go okay for them, or it could go very badly for them. I don't see it going well for them, per se.
They're interesting to bring up here for this, because, like, could the Devils be better than the Rangers? Because I've often thought about them in the last couple of years as like this up and coming team. They've got all this young talent. They signed Panarin, by the way, but they've got Alexis Lafreniere. They drafted first overall and he's only gotten his feet wet. Kaapo Kakko looked a little bit better in his second year and he's a high level talent. He went second overall a couple of years ago. Keandre Miller is a really up and coming defenseman in the league. And Igor Shesterkin and Net looked like an all-star when he first showed up and he's still like 22 years old. They got all this young talent, but right, like, what is their direction now? It seems like they're just obsessed with beating the crap out of Tom Wilson, because they get Sammy Blais who in the deal for Pavel Buchnevich, who's basically a fourth liner, a tough guy. And then they go sign like the toughest guy in the league and Ryan Reeves, or trade for him, a third round pick. So I don't know. They just seem obsessive over not allowing Tom Wilson to push them around anymore. And I don't think that has to work by any means. That could blow up in their face, in that every time you play another team, well, you're getting run over in your own end. So what does it matter if you have Ryan Reeves on the ice?
Exactly. And, you know, Ryan Reeves could be a detriment to the team as well, because he takes a lot of penalties.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I like the Rangers here. I guess I'd still put the Devils second from the bottom after Columbus. I think Columbus is probably gonna be pretty bad this year. No, I was going to mention maybe the Flyers, but I think your Flyers are going to be, they're going to be fine. I'm not sure they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender. In fact, I would probably bet against that, but I don't think they're going to be down in the dumps. Like, I think Columbus will be, for instance. That sound right? And then we can move on here.
Yeah. I think there's just so many new guys in the mix. It's going to be hard to tell what's going on with the team until we're getting about 10 games in to get a feel for how things are meshing.
Right. All right, well, let's bring up some of the big headliners from this week. And I think a lot of the biggest stories that happened this week were in Chicago. And that dates back to NHL draft weekend. They trade a first-round pick, a high first-round pick that ended up being Cole Sillinger, as well as a conditional first-round pick next season. They do get the 32nd pick back, but they acquire Seth Jones from the Columbus Blue Jackets. And then they go ahead and they sign him to an 8-year deal worth $76 million per year, making him one of the highest-paid defensemen in the sport. They a nice little minor signing, pulling from the Sabres, get Jake McCabe on a 4-year deal worth $4 million per year. I would qualify him as a very solid second pair defenseman. And Chicago has had a lot of depth issues in the past couple of years, so I think he will really provide the depth they need to their blue line. And then the biggest story, maybe not the biggest move, but the biggest story is all that happened with Marc-Andre Fleury. So I think maybe whether or not they are a massively improved team this year might come down to whether Fleury plays for them or not, because I think there's still doubt as to whether that will happen. He's weighing his options. But I don't know. That's how I think of Chicago right now. I think they could be a muchly improved team from last year to this year, but if Fleury's not there, I don't think they can do it. I think that it's only modest improvement if Fleury's not there.
Yeah, I think the other big factor for me is if Jonathan Toews comes back healthy or not. Mm-hmm. I think that they need some more offense on that team and a more solid presence up front. And if he's not able to provide that, I don't know how much they can improve.
I mentioned they improved their depth on the blue line. Like, I like their blue line now. Seth Jones, Calvin DeHaan, although I guess they could move him. But I like DeHaan. I like McCabe. They brought Caleb Jones in, who is a good third pair defenseman already from Edmonton in that Duncan Keith trade. Connor Murphy, they still got under contract. I like their blue line. And I like their goalie tandem if it's Fleury and Lankinen. But, yeah, they didn't touch forward. Well, I guess they traded for Tyler Johnson in that crazy Lightning cap move again, where they sent Brent Seabrook back, because that's still a thing in the league. But right. Like, to your point, Tyler Johnson is not, you know, changing my opinion on your forward depth. He's fine, but he's not the player he used to be. And he's expensive. So I think I agree that their forward group is not to a point where I would even pick them maybe to make the playoffs yet. What do we think of Fleury? Do you think he plays? From reading, no. You don't think he plays for, you don't think he plays at all? Or you don't think he plays for Chicago?
I think he demands a trade, and if they won't give it to him, he retires.
Okay, man. And that's so bad by Chicago. I mean, I guess if he retires, they don't have the cap hit. But I don't know. How do you feel about this? Like, it almost seems like a tough task to find somebody to take that entire contract, and Vegas did it. They found Chicago. And if Chicago's now got to turn around and find both a team that's willing to take on $7 million in net at this point in the offseason and find a team that Fleury would be willing to go to and play for, I would bet against him playing, because that sounds like a tough task. And if you're Chicago, you don't want to take on the contract and then have to do one of these things that, you know, like the Islanders did with Andrew Ladd or the Devils did with Will Butcher, where you've got to give somebody a draft pick to take the contract, because you should then, that's a bad look if you basically gave away a draft pick for nothing in a 2-week span. And I don't know, how many teams would Fleury want to play for? Pittsburgh would obviously be on that list, but sounds like they don't want that at this point. And like, everyone made their goalie moves, right? Like, Carolina signed Freddie Anderson. We mentioned Bernier in New Jersey. The Stars went out and grabbed Braden Holtby. I mean, the Sabres are stuck with Craig Anderson right now, but I can't believe Marc-Andre Fleury would even consider playing for Buffalo. So I don't know. Maybe he does retire.
I mean, it seems like the right thing to do, especially because, I mean, the real villain here is Vegas, right? Because they're the ones who have been so ruthless about it. And he was promised that he could play out his days in Vegas, and clearly he was lied to. And so I don't know that Marc-Andre Fleury wants to stick around in that town to retire after that.
Right. Well, yeah, like, what is the responsibility of the team there? Because I would argue that, while, like, even if they had promised to him in the past that, like, we're going to let you finish out your career here, if you go to him and say, like, listen, we just can't afford to spend $12 million in net anymore, and we've got to move you, but you've got to get way out in front of that. You got to know what the player's motivation is. You got to know that if you're going to go that route, that Fleury can have time to decide what he wants to do, where he wants to go, whether he wants to retire or not. But you've got to make it clear to him well before the trade that your time here in Vegas is done, and now it's up to you to decide what you want to do. But it doesn't sound like that's what happened at all. It's looked like they surprised him, not even calling him. Like, he finds out through Twitter. Like, that's such a bad job that he wasn't even involved in the process, let alone you couldn't even pick up the phone and make sure that he knew beforehand. And I don't buy Kelly McCrimmon's reasoning for how that happened, by the way. McCrimmon in his press conference afterwards said that it got leaked because they didn't want to tell Fleury yet because the trade was still processing. It wasn't finalized, and it was still going through the league office. But if you're Kelly McCrimmon, you submit the trade into the league office, you got to know that thing could leak at any moment, because it's no longer just in your hands. Now you have the trade, the Blackhawks have the trade, and people in the NHL office have the trade. And where do you think these reporters get their information? Where does LeBron get it? Where does Dreger get it? They're probably getting it from people that work in the league office. So I think
agents, for that matter.
And agents. Although it seems like Alan Walsh was kind of caught off guard too, Doug. So maybe not that agent. But you're right. The agents is a lot of times where it comes from too. So I guess all I want to say here is I don't criticize Vegas for the move. I think they, even though we won the Vezina, I think they should have moved on from him. I like Leonard. I think at $5 million per year, that's a fine contract, but you can't have $12 million in net, but you screwed it up. Like you went about it as poorly as you could go about it. And I don't know. It has me thinking a lot differently about their front office than I did a week ago.
Absolutely. It's I just was floored by the whole thing, and to treat a guy who is an reigning Vezina winner and NHL legend like this is just unconscionable to me.
Did you probably, I know you follow me on Twitter. You probably didn't see it though. Did you see, I got in a Twitter fight with Bo Bennett, former Penguin, this week. We were a little back and forth about how he made a comment about Fleury being treated so poorly by the hockey world over the years. And I just took issue with that. Like he's no doubt a great player, but he's had a lot of bad seasons for like a Hall of Fame level netminder. I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Fame level netminder, but essentially my point was, I don't think he's treated poorly by the hockey world. I think he was definitely treated poorly here by Vegas, but you kind of just mentioned it. Like Fleury's treated like a god in this sport. Like he's beloved like across the league by fans, by players, by other general managers. I mean, Chicago just took on a $7 million contract for a 36-year-old goalie, like without even knowing whether or not he wanted to come there. So I don't know. I get into a lot of fights with people on Fleury. I try not to get bogged down by the save percentage, but I'm a numbers guy. So sometimes I do. And that can be a bad thing for me because then I start comparing him to James Reimer and then people get upset. Because he's absolutely better than James Reimer, but the career save percentage is about the same. But yeah. And last thing on Fleury here, because let's assume for sake of conversation that he decides to go to Chicago, that he realizes it's basically Chicago or don't play, because you're not going to find another team that has a better chance to win right now. If he's in Chicago, do you think they're a playoff team? Because I think I'm like 50-50. And it really comes down to Fleury, because Fleury, if you look at his numbers and you look at his production the past couple of seasons, how's his career gone in his 30s? It's almost every other year that he's either one of the best goalies in the world or he's giving you backup level production. That happened even the last 2 years. Last year, he was the best goalie in the world. He got the Vezina. The year before that, 905 save percentage, one of the worst starters in the league at 5-on-5, and he lost his starting job to Robin Leonard. So I think that's why it's almost like a flip of a coin, right? Like for Chicago, to me, it's just what version of Fleury shows up if he does.
Yeah, I mean, it even goes back further than that, just remembering lots of games when he was on the Pens playing against the Flyers where he just looked terrible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he hasn't been amazingly consistent over his career, but he has come up in clutch opportunities and clutch games. So that's why I think he has the reputation that he does, that he somehow manages to get it together when he needs to.
Right. No, like if they were to make the playoffs and he's on that run, then it would be like, all right, look out, Chicago could actually win another Stanley Cup, just because Fleury is a goaltender capable of carrying you through an entire postseason. It's just, you know, again, the question of whether or not that's the version of him that shows up, but that's in there. That version of him is in there.
If you have not tried a Built Bar yet, I strongly encourage you to do so, as somebody that did not eat protein bars because of the taste. And as somebody, am I a candy snob? Am I an aficionado? I don't know. I eat a lot, not as much anymore. Growing up, a lot of candy bars. And I'm telling you, Built Bar is a candy bar. It's not. It tastes like one, though. You have 18 amazing flavors to pick from, including 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. If you go for the coconut almond puff flavor, that is my favorite. And I'm not even a coconut guy, but it's like eating a Mallow cup. That's how good it is. Built Bars are also great for the healthy conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for keto diets. For example, the peanut butter flavor, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar, and only 5 grams net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you will get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
All right, let's get away from Chicago a little bit. Let's talk about another former dynasty that might be looking to have a little bit of a resurgence. And it's in the Pacific Division. The Los Angeles Kings made one of the bigger forward moves of the week, signing Philip Deneau, who I believe is one of the better two-way centermen in the sport. Very criminally underrated during his time in Montreal. And this is really their big move instead of going for instance, like a Jack Eichel. They've now got Kopitar as their number one center, Deneau as their number two center, and they've got star prospects coming through that will probably arrive this year. Quinton Byfield, second overall pick from last year as a centerman. Alex Turcotte, who is a fifth overall pick from a couple years ago as a centerman. He probably starts the year on the wing. So they've kind of got this combination of, you still got a couple of these really good players hanging around from the old days, like Kopitar, and Dustin Brown is still even playing pretty well. Quick isn't anymore, but fine, because Cal Peterson, look, this young kid's arrived. He's a starting goalie. And Byfield and Turcotte, and now Deneau has been entered into that equation. In that division, with the Ducks, Flames, Oilers, Sharks, Kraken, Canucks, and Golden Knights, I think I would pick the Kings to finish in the top three today. How does that sound to you with that being their division?
I'm not 100% sure there. I think you're right in terms of the forward side of things. And they even had a depth signing of Athanasiou, which I thought was pretty good as well. But I just worry about their defensive play. Mm-hmm. That are they going to score a lot of goals, but give up a lot of goals too?
That's a good point, because Doughty is not the same player that he used to be. Alex Edler is fine at this point in his career, but he's older. And then you don't have much after that. So I guess
exactly.
Right. Yeah. You're going to have to outscore people. I was going to say, like, Deneau and Kopitar are such a good 1-2 combo in terms of two-way centermen, but you still got to have the blue line. Your defense doesn't come down to your centermen. But I will say that's a nice little boost that Deneau and Kopitar are both like, they could be Selke nominees by the end of the year. But you're right. Good point. I think there's going to be a lot of high danger scoring chances coming up against Cal Peterson this year. If it wasn't the Kings, like, how would you see the Pacific? If I made you pick it today, I think Vegas is an easy number one.
Maybe Edmonton.
Edmonton as the two, I think, is where I'd be, even though you never know what you're getting with them.
I go back and forth on the Kraken just because the rest of the division is so terrible. I mean, I think Calgary has a shot as well to maybe pick. I think the Kings and Calgary could compete for that last spot.
I like that you threw Seattle in there, though, because I don't know. Should I not? They should be considered. They should be considered. I mean, they have the goaltending. They signed Grubauer this week. I just wonder about how much they'll be able to score goals. You know, I like Yanni Gord. I like Jaden Schwartz. I like Alex Wenberg. I like Donskoy. But are these the guys I want to be relying on? Yeah, I like Eberle too. But are these the guys I want to be solely relying on to produce offense? Like, I feel like they've got a lot of second line players and they don't have any first line players maybe. So that's my biggest question about them. But I wouldn't rule out that they could make the playoffs this year, because again, that division is crap. So yeah, anything you want to add to that? Or
yeah, I was just gonna say, knowing the Dave Hackstall factor there, he does really well in the first season.
That's so true. Did they win around the first year, or did they just they were just really good in the regular season? I'm forgetting.
They won around that year, I believe.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I think that, given the chip on the shoulder factor and, you know, ragtag factor, that I think that still holds true from the Vegas situation, even if it's a different strategy with different players.
Sure.
There's that factor. Plus, I think Dave Hackstall could figure something out in one season. After that, don't know.
Yeah.
Don't really have any faith in him after that. But I think the chance is there. It's just the right circumstances with the other teams and how they perform.
All right. Well, I could see it happening. I think the Pacific will be really interesting this year. Someone's going to come out of nowhere. That, though, is going to pretty much do it. I'm just doing one little scroll through Twitter just to make sure that nothing broke during our podcast here, because that happened on Tuesday where the Fleury trade just interrupted everything that we were doing. And it looks like we're pretty good. So that's going to do it for us on today's podcast. Rachel, do you want to let everyone know where you can follow you on Twitter and where you can check out your stuff?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at rmiriam. That's R-M-I-R-I-A-M. And you can hear me every day on Locked On Flyers. And that is our Twitter account as well.
And you can follow me at Sneaky Joe Sports. And you could check out the Locked On Sabres podcast, where we are still dealing with, or we're, well, I shouldn't say it's a bad thing. We still get Jack Eichel trade content because he's still here. so we're going to be talking plenty more about that situation in the coming days. Don't you worry. So that's going to do it though for us. I'll be back on Tuesday with Mike DiStefano. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Rachel Donner, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.